Well, now to the politics around how we're all to live together in this new century, in places of mixed belief and none. In many places in the West, including Australia, it's one of the most challenging issues there is. How much can be said out loud? What's constructive? What's destructive? For instance, at a convention 2 weekends ago in Lidcombe, in Sydney's western suburbs, Burhan Hanif, the British leader of Hizbut Tahrir, the global Islamist group, was pretty blunt with the 500 or so participants. He said democracy was incompatible with Islam because the Quran insisted Allah was the sole lawmaker and Muslim political involvement could not be based on, quote, secular and erroneous concepts such as democracy and freedom. Well, a young Australian sociology and Islamic studies researcher, Dr. Halim Rain, has thrown himself into charting emerging trends in Muslim political thought in various parts of the world. He's deputy director of Griffith University's Islamic Research Unit, and this week his book, Islam and Contemporary Civilization, was published. And it's my pleasure to welcome him out to Saturday Extra. Good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Very good, thanks. Now, those remarks, before we get onto your research, those remarks by the head of Hizbut Tahrir, pretty challenging, to say the least. Do they represent a wide range of thought from your research in modern emerging Islamic political thought, or are they very much a fringe?
Hizbut Tahrir actually has quite extensive support around the world. However, I think that most of their ideas are part of something that is becoming fairly passé in Islamic thought. Islamic thought is evolving, and over the past decade in particular, it has evolved quite substantially in a direction that is moving very far away from the core ideas of Hizbut Tahrir.
Now, that old idea, well, it was an old idea that the good Muslim owed his or her loyalty to something above the nation state. Just as it used to be accused of Catholics, for instance, that they actually owed their loyalty to the Vatican, not to the nation state. And that certainly disappeared in terms of Catholics, but it's hung around Muslims. How would you say the average Muslim in Australia, for instance, thinks about that particular dilemma, or is it not a dilemma?
Well, I don't think it's really an issue. It's not a theological issue. I don't think that issue has changed. Muslims are still deeply committed to God, and all of the basic aspects of worship in Islam are standard, you know, across the Muslim world. The belief in five times daily prayer, in fasting during the month of Ramadan, in giving charity to the poor and needy, making the pilgrimage once in a lifetime, all of those things are standard among Muslims. What is changing, though, is the way Muslims view politics. And what has driven Muslim politics for so long has been an oppositional attitude towards the West in particular, and opposition to trends that have emerged in the Western world, namely secularism and also democracy. But this is actually changing quite substantially in the Muslim world today, and we've seen the emergence of a number of what I'm referring to as second-generation Islamist political parties.
And what are the characteristics of that second generation by comparison with the first? I mean, and presumably while you say first generation, the diaspora first generation, people who've come out of those traditional Muslim countries, is that what you mean?
That's right. Well, if you look back in the 1930s, we saw the emergence of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and At around the same time, we saw the emergence of the Jamaat Islami in Pakistan. And there were a number of very influential thinkers around at this time. In Egypt, you had Hassan al-Banna and Sayyid Qutb. In Pakistan, you had Maududi. And in Iran, of course, you had the Ayatollah Khomeini. And they basically advocated quite similar ideas that related to the formation of an Islamic state and the implementation of Sharia law. And this was a common feature of this particular idea, and of course, quite oppositional, ideas when it came to Islam-West relations. Mm. But what has changed is that what has happened is that there's been a failure of the first generation of Islamic political parties, parties that have advocated the implementation of Sharia law and the formation of an Islamic state, have really let down many of their citizens. When you look at states such as Saudi Arabia or, Pakistan, when it implemented Islamic law, or Sudan, or, even in Iran, the basic needs of people and the aspirations of people more broadly have not been sufficiently met. And that has led to a decline in support for those first-generation Islamic political parties. And that's gone some way to stimulate the emergence of a second generation of Islamically-oriented parties. And you can point to some examples. I mean, one example, a good one, would be the AKP in Turkey.
Mm.
I should qualify that by saying that the AKP doesn't regard itself as Islamist or Islamic in any way. Of course, that would be a violation of the constitution in Turkey. It regards itself rather as a conservative democratic party. But you can see that the AKP even respects and reflects Islamic values and traditions. And of course, 99% of the population in Turkey are Muslim.
And what about, obviously, the PKS in Indonesia,
yep,
which is a very interesting one on our doorstep?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the PKS in Indonesia has 56 ministers,
members of parliament.
Yeah, has four ministers, and it has about 9% of the vote. With the PKS, one of the challenges they're facing at the moment is their capacity building. You know, they've been surprised by the level of success they've had at elections, and so they're taking a steady-as-we-go approach and trying to build a more solid foundation. They actually have an MOU with the Labour Party so that they can learn more about governing, because they don't have experience in this. They've come from Islamic roots, a da'wah or preaching, you know, roots, you could say, and now they've moved they've become a political party. But you can see them to be quite distinct from the earlier Islamically oriented political parties in Indonesia, in that this party doesn't advocate, you know, the formation of an Islamic state, but rather what they say is that an Islamic state is one where people should have their rights, there should be opposition to corruption, there should be a fairer distribution of wealth, we should seek to eradicate poverty.
Typical orthodox,
right,
political aspirations.
Right, we should respect human rights and those things that we would value, in a Western context.
So in terms of, do you think people in Australia, for instance, Muslims in Australia that you've looked at, as well as, of course, around the world, is there a new type of Muslim politician emerging, in your view, in this second generation, that there are real patterns you can detect, or is it all just too diffuse yet?
Yeah, I think that the new pattern is that the new Muslim politician is more in touch with reality. If you take the case of Indonesia, the mood is quite secular. If you take the case of Malaysia, Muslims only make up about 60% of the population, so you've got 40% non-Muslims. And so if you're a hardcore, first-generation, Islamically-oriented political party that advocates implementation of Sharia law and the formation of an Islamic state, there's a large proportion of the population that is never going to vote for you. And so what the second generation has done is come to a middle position, one that is appealing to, you know, the broadest cross-section of society. It's advocating policies that meet the needs and expectations of Muslims and non-Muslims alike. And the way this is being done and the way they've been able to maintain Islamic legitimacy is to change the discourse and the way that the Quran, for example, is approached. And this is another major distinction between the first generation and the second generation. The first generation advocated a more literal approach to the Quran and Islamic sacred scripture, whereas with the second generation, they have more of what I call a maqasid-oriented approach. The maqasid is an Arabic word that means higher objectives, intent, or purpose. And so rather than approaching a text like the Quran from a very literal perspective, the Quran is approached in terms of context. The context in which verses were written, the social, political, and historical context, and also looking at these verses in terms of what was their purpose, what was their objective. And so when all of these factors are taken into consideration, it's recognized that what Islam really was meant to be about was establishing a just and ethically based social order. And when parties like the AKP in Turkey and the PKS in Indonesia and the PKR in Malaysia assessed the history of Islamically oriented political parties, they noticed that those parties and governments that came to implement Sharia law really didn't meet the basic needs and aspirations of people. There was still, you know, widespread poverty, there was still widespread corruption, there was a lack of human rights, and the demand of the people was that they would have more freedom, they would have more of a say in their running of their country, that there would be a more equitable distribution of wealth, there would be less corruption and so on. And so it's through a maqasid, this higher objective and this contextual approach to Quranic interpretation, that these parties have been able to reconcile the two.
Well, that's terribly interesting because, of course, it implies that they are free to think this very interesting new interpretive, or throw this new interpretive light on the Quran. That means the role of the mullahs and the religious establishment is, and it's a question for you, does that mean it's slightly less or disproportionately less in places where this has occurred?
It's actually interesting that it's not really the ulama or the mullahs or this religious class that are most heavily involved in this I have to qualify that term new approach as well, but I'll come to that. It's really a new generation of educated Muslims that are most embracing of this particular approach, rather than the traditionally educated scholarly class.
And finally,
if I just had to comment about that point about new, it's not actually a new approach. The maqasid-oriented approach was actually developed in the 14th century, and you had a number of scholars at that time come up with this particular perspective. It's more of a philosophy of Islamic law. You had people like Ibn Taymiyyah in Damascus, and you had people like Abu Ishaq al-Shatibi in Muslim Spain, who developed this approach based on this higher objectives, to move away from this literal approach. And the reasons were very interesting. There was major social, political, and economic turmoil in the Muslim world in the 13th century. One example is that you had the sacking of Baghdad by the Mongols, completely destroying that very advanced city at that time.
Yes.
And so by the 14th century, you have some political stability again, but it's a time where scholars were then reflecting on what had happened and how the world had changed. And it's quite interesting to note that it's now in the 21st century that you have Muslim intellectuals engaging in the same activity. There was major turmoil for Muslims in the 20th century. You had, the 19th and 20th century had colonial rule. Muslims became newly independent from colonial rule. And you had, by the middle of the 20th century, you had the formation of the modern Muslim nation states that struggled a lot with various social, political, and economic problems. And it's only with the turn of the century that many of these countries are starting to get on steady footing.
Mm.
And so it's at this time you see, a gravitation more towards this maqasid-oriented approach.
Just quickly, when you said earlier that the PKS in Indonesia had completed an MOU, a Memo of Understanding with the Labor Party, that's the Labor Party in Australia, is it? What role do they see? What sort of advice do they want from the Labor Party?
I have this information from the PKS, not from the Labor Party. I've never discussed it with any people within the Labor Party. But my understanding is that what they want is assistance with capacity building on how to govern.
In this very sort of modern, really modern Western way.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the idea. So this is, part of this emerging trend in the Muslim world is really to not continue to see the West in adversarial terms, but to start to recognize that the Western world has developed, superior systems and institutions that the wider world can learn from and benefit from. And that's the realization of the second generation Islamist political parties, that the Western world has developed these systems and institutions that are beneficial to their own people.
Well, Dr. Rain, this is very interesting research. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.
And Dr. Rain is Deputy Director of the Griffith Islamic Research Unit, and his most recent book, Islam and Contemporary Civilization, Evolving Ideas, Transforming Relations, is a Melbourne University Press publication, published this week. And look out for further research that he's undertaking as well, and we'll keep you up to date with him.